Better Health Radio Show with the good doctor, Dr. Renee Boyce, a beaming, happy bunks in Dr. Renee Boyce this evening. Good evening to you, Doc.
Good evening, Grayson. I'm usually beaming and happy and bouncing whenever I come into the studio. Oh. This is something that I really do enjoy. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. No, I'm beaming and bouncing and happy, just like you.
Well, good evening to everybody. Welcome to this evening's edition of the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life. Today's show is going to be a show with a difference, and I'll get to that in just a moment. But remember, when you want to give us a call here in the studio, 434-1790. If you want to send us a WhatsApp, 266-4862. And we have to send two shout-outs. Is it shouts out or shout outs?
Let's call it shout outs.
Yeah, I think, you know, English would make it shouts out.
Yep, but correct.
Yes,
as an attorney's general.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But I think shout outs sounds better.
Everybody understand that.
Yes. So we need to shout out the Gaskin family. I saw them this afternoon, so I wanted to say hi to the Gaskin family. I can't even remember their address. It's in St. Michael. But they know who they
all right,
are.
The Gaskin family in St. Michael.
So if there's more than one Gaskin family in St. Michael, hello to you too. Because, you know, sometimes people don't want their names broadcast over radio. So I'm just saying hello to you. You know who you are. And I also want to say hi to Mona. Mona is actually sending a message to you, Gredston. It's
to
not
me.
No.
What did I do?
She's just very enamored, enraptured.
Oh, okay. Yes. In that case, I thought I did something wrong.
No. So she's saying hello to you. So good evening to you, Mona. Hope you're listening.
Have a good evening, Mona.
Yes. So remember those numbers, 434-1790 and WhatsApp 266-4862. And why did I repeat the numbers? Because those numbers are going to be integral to today's show. Now, medical school, you have to do, well, back in the day when I did medical school. Yes, back in the day. it was 2 years of preclinical studies, so mainly book work and lab work. And then 3 years doing clinical studies, so you were at that time in the clinics and at the hospitals and so on. Then you had your final exams after your 5th year and 1 year of internship thereafter. Only then could you be qualified to practice.
7.
So that's six years. Mm-hmm.
2, 3.
And 1.
And 1, okay.
Yes, that is 6. Mm-hmm. Is that what they teach you at Up and On? I can resist. So, 6 years. 6 years.
I'm going to leave you alone because
you're
so happy today.
Thank you. 6 years it takes to get you to be, I don't want to say a basic doctor, but get to your basic degree and to allow you to register. But this evening, within the next 56 minutes, we're going to see if we can make doctors out of you, the listening public.
This should be interesting.
Yes. So today's show is called Doc for a Day. Well, it's not even going to be a day. It's going to be Doc for an Hour. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to give the clinical clues. And I want you to call in and see if you can make the correct diagnosis. You will have to maybe ask a few more questions. Some of the diagnoses might be straight up and easy to do. Others might need a little more probing. So we hope that you, and don't be afraid. It's not a case of your diagnosis is going to be wrong, because there's still going to be information gleaned from this method of teaching, because we'll still discuss around whatever the diagnosis is and what makes it right or wrong. So, on your mark, get set, go. Number one, your child's class teacher has sent a note home, drawing your attention to a rash he noticed on your son's arm. When the little boy gets home, you notice a round rash with raised edges, and it looks scaly to you, like if there's white skin peeling on it. What is your diagnosis? Let's see if anybody is going to be able to call in and give me the correct diagnosis.
I've got something in my head already, but I'll let the caller go first and see what he or she can come up with. Well, that one has gone and 2 more has come in. So, wait a minute. 3 has come in. Let's see if we can get this done quickly without... Oh, 5 have come in. Woohoo! Let's go then.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Peace be unto you and yours.
Hello, Gail. How are you?
And the staff.
Thanks, Gail.
Is it ringworms or skin?
That's what I had, so that's what we were correct.
What makes you think it's ringworm?
Because usually the ringworm, the skin would be round, like reddish, And that's the scary thing that you're speaking about.
Yes, you are absolutely correct.
All right. Great deal. We started off well.
Yes, well done. So one of the things that I do want to mention, a couple teaching points here. Ringworm is actually one of the more common infections that your child would come home with. But never assume that every rash on a child's arm that's round is ringworm. Make sure that, and in most cases, you can go to the pharmacy and they'll give you a cream and you use it and so on.
Right, I was going to ask you what was the treatment.
Uh-huh. Yes, and an antifungal cream because it's actually called Tinea corporis, a fungal infection about the body. Tinea, the fungal aspect, corporis, Latin for body.
Okay. And a topical treatment
would usually work for that.
All right.
But the important thing always to remember in medicine is that there are what we call differential diagnoses. There are other things that look like tinea corporis or ringworm. So different types of eczema, contact dermatitis, meaning a reaction that you get on the skin if you come into contact with, you know, sometimes the nickel in your belt buckle, or if you touch something and your skin reacts against it, you can also get something that might look like ringworm. So if you realize that your child has what you thought was a ringworm and you're treating it the way that I suggested, a topical cream given to you by your pharmacist or by your doctor, you realize that it's not improving, well, then you have to go back to the doctor or go to the doctor in the first place. The other thing, ringworms tend to be solitary, so you only get one ringworm. So if you see that the child has multiple ringworms, more than likely that diagnosis is not ringworm, it's something else. So definitely need to go and get that checked out. The other important part about ringworm is that the child does not need to be out of school for a whole term for a ringworm infection. Sometimes because it's itchy, what can happen is that you can scratch and then it gets infected by bacteria. And this is a little more complicated, but again, your doctor will be able to give you the right creams and so on. Once the child is being treated, and once the wound isn't oozing and looking offensive, because children can be very critical of each other. So imagine sending to school your child with a sore and, look at he hand. And we know that children can be very, very, there's no filter in some of them. But once the rash is being treated, your child can go to school and you can get a note from your doctor saying such, so that the child is not at home for a whole term because of a ringworm infection. So we're off to a good start.
And you had all callers, all call lines lighting up there. There were six callers on the line there for that one question. I see how they do on this second one.
Yes. So number two, well, I'm beginning to wonder now if I have enough questions. Well, we'll see how it goes.
They might get harder as we go along.
They do.
All right.
Yes, and we do have some people here on the WhatsApp who are sending in the correct answers. Yes, it's commonly called ringworm, and the correct medical name is Tinea corporis.
This is what you said earlier.
Yes. Oh, and I just remembered another point. Please do forgive me, listeners, you know, as I age. The brain cells tend not to retain as much as they used to before.
That's all right.
Yes.
We all understand.
Tinea capitis. Now, remember, we did a little Latin just now. Corporis is body.
You said.
Capitis has to be head.
Ah.
So ringworm infection of the head must be treated with oral medication. So topical creams work. Right. They work for the ones on the body, but they do not resolve the infection in the head. So you do have to get medication prescribed for you by your doctor for ringworm infection of the head. And you see the same circles, you see the same circular patches, as the same round look as you see on the skin. Sometimes you might just see areas of hair loss, because fungal infection of the head is one of the causes for hair loss. And there's a show coming up on hair loss a little later down in the year. So that's going to be a very interesting show. So listen out for that. Listen up for that one. So remember, ringworm in the head needs to be treated by oral medication. See your doctor about that one. Number two, you are the caretaker for an elderly aunt who has become a little troublesome. She is not remembering as before. She accuses relatives of taking money from her drawer. And two nights ago, she was found by a neighbor three houses down. What is your diagnosis? Remember, you need to ask additional questions as well. Don't just assume that what you think it is what it is.
All right. As usual, we've got a call. Calls now on the line. I've got a thing in my head about what that could be, but let's see if someone else has the answer.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show. I think we lost that one.
All right. Let's try this other one then.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, thank you. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, too.
Would you like to go ahead and give me your diagnosis?
Yes, please. Is it dementia?
You're asking me?
Well, that's what I had too.
It is dementia.
So let's hope that it's correct.
Yes, please. Dementia.
Okay. Can you give me some additional symptoms of dementia?
Okay. Then persons, as you say, they have put things, sometimes they don't even recognize family members, close family members.
Mm-hmm.
They have, sometimes they're wearing their glasses and not even realize they're wearing them, or put things aside. And some critical things such as eating. Sometimes they eat and they have forgotten that they have eaten for the day, etc.
Or the other way around, they haven't eaten, but they are
telling you that they have eaten.
So we do have, so dementia is the answer that I had. I wasn't saying that you were wrong. I was just teasing. And what is the name? Whose name is attached to the most common type of dementia? Is it the most common? One of the more common types of dementia.
Whose name?
Yes. What's the name attached?
Give us a hint.
No.
You're not giving us a hint?
No.
She's not giving us a hint.
Somebody on WhatsApp has the correct answer. You do know it.
I
do? Yes, you do.
I know sometimes people say like, okay, I'm thinking.
Just go okay. Right ahead and spit it out.
I'm thinking.
Yeah, we have some correct answers here on WhatsApp.
Alzheimer's?
That's correct.
Okay.
Named after the German physician Alois Alzheimer, who noticed that in the brain cells of some of these people that died from strange medical diseases in about 1906, that there were some abnormal proteins. And again, later on in the year, sometime we hope to do Alzheimer's. So good job.
Okay.
Thank you kindly.
No. Okay. So here we are, Alzheimer's. Yes.
That's... You should have been a teacher, by the way. And your students are learning very well.
Thank you very much. I love teaching. What I want you to remember is that Alzheimer's is not the only cause for the elderly person not remembering and doing strange things and walking away from home. Some of the other things that we need to recognize is that the elderly population, just like babies, I'm not saying that they're the same, but they're what we call at-risk populations. They are more at risk for falls. They're more at risk for infections by virtue of their immune system not being as robust as it was when they were younger. They are more likely to be the victims of abuse because there are people who take advantage of the elderly simply because they're weaker. They might have some memory loss and so on. So they are at a sort of disadvantage by virtue just of being old. And I'm not saying that every old person is susceptible to being disadvantaged, but we know that this happens. Some of the other things that can happen that can cause symptoms similar to dementia of the Alzheimer's type would be infections.
Mm-hmm.
So if an elderly person has something, what we would consider to be a simple bladder infection, that can cause confusion in the elderly and it can cause them to do strange things, behave in strange ways. Chest infections, for example, they can also cause problems with the elderly. And one of the things that happens with elderly people as well, sometimes because they don't taste as well as they did when they were younger, they tend not to like to eat. We have to consider things like depression in the elderly, and so they might not be taking in as much food, and then they end up with things like electrolyte imbalances, meaning that their salt levels and potassium levels are not the way they should be. Maybe they have a cancer somewhere and their calcium is high. All of these different things can affect the way they think and behave. So when you have an older person who seems to be behaving strangely, don't assume that it is Alzheimer's. It can be any number of things. They could have slipped in the bath, hit their head, and they could have gotten a bleed between the skull and the membranes of the head.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, I might have had one of those because I'm not remembering. I am here trying to remember what it is. If there's anybody medical listening, please rescue me. It's just not coming to the tip of my tongue right now. But they could have had a bleed in the head. So all of these different things can cause the elderly to be behaving differently.
What happens when the young's behaving like that strangely? What's the diagnosis for
Well,
them?
We also have to consider that they could have had bleeds in their head. It could be that they're simply rude and obnoxious. They could have infections in their brain as well. They can also have infections and so on. So strange behavior must be investigated. They can have personality disorders. They can have other mental disorders such as depression and bipolar disorder. So there's so many things. Medicine is so wide and varied. You know, there's so many things.
If they can see you smiling.
Okay, fine. You know, just don't knock at me because I enjoy what I do.
She's a happy camper today, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. Happy camper.
Yes, and another thing, I remember there was a case where we saw in neurology clinic an elderly gentleman. He was brought by his relatives because he wasn't walking properly. He wasn't remembering. He was displaying what they thought was the classical signs of dementia. But when we did our workup, so you do different blood tests, you might have to do a CT scan and so on and so forth. It turned out that he had tertiary syphilis. He had caught syphilis when he was younger and it wasn't treated properly. So
I'm assuming tertiary is the advanced.
Is the advanced stage. Hmm. And he was treated and one would not believe that he was the same gentleman that had come in all confused and so on and so forth. It was amazing. That's one of the cases that has always stuck with me. And that's since, if I say men, I'll date myself. But that's quite a few years ago. So remember, so the take-home point for this one is don't assume that confusion in the elderly is because, okay, well, he or she is getting old now and it's at this time that they start doing strange things. It could be something like a bladder infection or a chest infection that can be treated, simply treated. And they can go on to lead a more productive elderly life.
All right.
All right. Oh, and the other thing about the elderly as well. Remember I said about children and the elderly being at the extremes of that norm for the age. The elderly don't mount a fever response because the fever is part of the immune response. You develop an infection, and there's a series of proteins that one triggers the other, so it's a cascade. And one of the proteins that's produced leads to the development of a fever. So one of the classic signs of inflammation is elevated temperature or fever. And the elderly, however, don't seem to mount that response the same way a younger person would. So if you're looking for a fever in an elderly person, you might not find it, but they might still have an infection going on. So don't necessarily look out for the same things you would look out for in a younger person. With the elderly, any changes that you notice at all, changes in behavior, changes in mood, must be checked out by a doctor. So we are on to question number three. I cannot believe that we are at question number three. I'm going to have to think on the spot about some questions. Oh my goodness, man, I thought that I had too many.
No, you have good students who are getting the answers very quickly.
Yes. Well, here we go. Question number three. Your 14-year-old daughter had a flu-like illness about 2 weeks ago, and she seemed to be getting better. Now she's looking weak and withdrawn and has been vomiting several times a day. What is your diagnosis?
Repeat that one for me, please.
Sure. Your 14-year-old daughter had a flu-like illness about 2 weeks ago, and she seemed to be getting better. Now she looks weak and withdrawn. She's actually been vomiting several times a day. What is your diagnosis?
We haven't got anybody on the line yet, and what I'm thinking, well, I say that, and right away there's somebody, so let's go right to the lines. Let me just note down what I'm thinking here, just in case you say I'm cheating when people advertise what they have.
Okay.
All right, let's go.
You've written it down?
Yes, I have.
Okay, good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening. I'm thinking she's pregnant.
Okay, and why? Why would you think that?
Because she's vomiting regularly.
Okay, well, believe it or not, that's not my answer. However, okay, that one is high on my list of differential diagnoses.
I didn't even think of that one. So
yes,
if that was the correct answer, it would have been so wrong.
Yes. So you listening for the correct answer?
Okay. Okay.
All right. So let's take this one out.
Okay. Before we take that one, somebody here on WhatsApp is saying gastro, and we also have cancer or pregnant.
So somebody's thinking just like the lady.
Yes. Let's take this call. Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show. Good evening. We seem to have lost that caller.
Or they're staying silent, so let's try this one then.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
All right. Let's try this one then, see what happens.
Hello, good evening. Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Is it the flu?
Well, I told you before that she had a flu-like illness, and she got better. So it's not the flu.
Okay.
Try again. Try. Make another guess.
All right. She's gone. All right. Nobody's giving us a buzz. When I said that last time,
somebody here said stomach ulcer. So I do have here gastritis and gastroesophageal reflux disease. So those do cause vomiting. So this person, 7722, is on the ball with the differential diagnosis. Somebody saying stomach flu. Hello to 2509 over there in the U.S. Good for you to jump in and say hi to us. We have a call. Let's take that call. Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Hello.
Hi. Good evening.
I think it's type 1 diabetes.
That is absolutely correct.
No, I had heard you before and given us those symptoms.
I see. So learning has taken place.
Caller, that was very good. We are doing very well. I want a good doctor to read aloud what I had written here.
Well, you see, I was born in the 1970s. I'm unable to read.
I'll give it even closer.
No. I'm unable to read hieroglyphics.
I believe if it starts with D and next letter is I and next letter is A and next letter is B, we're on to what?
Hieroglyphics,
yes. So we're doing
diabetes,
well.
Yes.
Because I had to write it down because I don't want you to think I'm jumping in the bandwagon after the callers are announcing what they're thinking. And I'm saying, yeah, I had that too. So I wrote it down before she said it. Congrats,
yes.
My dear.
Yes, congrats
thank
to you too,
much.
Redstone.
I'll continue to listen.
Sure, thank you very much.
Okay, bye.
So diabetes type 1, yes, that is the correct answer. And all the other differential diagnoses that the callers and those persons on WhatsApp gave are correct as well. The take-home point for this is that sometimes the children who present with diabetes type 1, not sometimes, most of the times they're actually very ill. The cases tend to go to pediatric intensive care unit, and the treatment for type 1 diabetes is insulin. We had a couple, he was in the first or second season, I don't remember, Chris and his family.
Young fellow?
Yeah, Chris and his family.
Michael School, I think
yes,
it was, right?
Yes.
I remember him.
So the treatment is insulin, and you have to think about the fact that your life is going to be changed because now you have to be a little more concerned about what you put in your mouth. You have to be concerned about whether your blood sugar is going to go too high or too low. You're concerned. I shouldn't say concerned. I think a better word to use is that you have to adjust the way you think about these things because you do want to lead a long, healthy life, and it's possible once you take care of yourself, once the child is involved in his or her care. Treatment for children, I found, is better when the children understand why you're doing this particular thing. So I am not assaulting you with a needle because I don't have anything to do with my time.
Mm-hmm.
No, the reason is, unfortunately, your pancreas does not make enough insulin. And what you do, you tell the children in language that they can understand, age-appropriate language. Let them know what the problem is. Associate the treatment with the problem so that they understand by taking this treatment, they can get better. And then at some points in time, the children don't even need your help with getting their medication. They know that at such and such a time, I'm supposed to get this medication. And sometimes they even remind you as the adult. And remember that you also have to try to keep diabetes under control, both for adults and children, because you're trying to stave off the long-term consequences like problems with the eyes, problems with the feet and kidneys and so on. So it makes sense to try to, I don't want to say suffer, because I'm trying not to associate negative things with being treated for diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to put in the hard work now so that the consequences at the end are not severe. I think that's the best way that I can put it at this point in time. So yes, pregnancy was my number one differential diagnosis. And one of the things that I found as a physician, we're going to get back to the callers.
Yeah, because I've got a caller here. You didn't ask a question, so I'm assuming that he or she just wants to ask a question. So I don't know if you want to engage him or her.
Okay, well, let's do this, and then I'll explain about the pregnancy. Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening. I just want you to repeat the question. That's very important for me. I just want, with the flu-like symptoms and the
sure.
vomiting, just repeat that question, please.
The question that I had written was, your 14-year-old daughter had a flu-like illness about 2 weeks ago and seemed to be getting better. Now she looks weak and withdrawn and has been vomiting several times a day.
Several times. Okay. Thank you.
You are most welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, so I was right. She just wanted to ask a question.
Yes.
Okay.
One of the things I've learned over the years is that we cannot assume, I'm treading very lightly here, mm-hmm. we cannot assume that teenagers are not sexually active. I do remember having to be very diplomatic, trying to find a way, because it's not my job. I have to be so careful when I say things because people misinterpret me.
Well, we are going to assume that you mean the best in any language you use. So
right.
Go ahead.
So it's not my job per se to determine whether or not your child, male or female, is sexually active. That should be a product of your relationship with your child.
Mm-hmm.
As a physician, and I'm presented with a 14, 15-year-old a woman, it doesn't matter, who has symptoms suggestive of pregnancy. But we're talking about children here because of the laws and delicate nature of teenage pregnancy and so on. You have to try to find a way to get permission to do a pregnancy test without causing all hell to break loose in the office or in the clinic and so on. Over the years, you develop a technique and you realize, you know, sometimes the test is negative and then other times the test is positive and all hell does break loose. Mm-hmm. But as a physician, it's your responsibility. It's my responsibility to make sure that I'm not ignoring, just because of social circumstances,
mm-hmm.
that I'm not ignoring the possibility because she could be sitting down there with a pregnancy that's in her tubes, which is life-threatening.
Okay.
So just because, you know, you don't want to cause any trouble, you push that aside. And then you have to deal with things as they come. So keep in mind,
parents.
Yes, keep in mind, you know, you have a young lady who is vomiting and she hasn't had a period.
That
yeah.
could be a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be type 1 diabetes too.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But yeah, so just had to put in that plug. Previous experiences. So the treatment is insulin. Children usually present in a very critical state and they need to go to pediatric intensive care. But the children do well. There's a very good program at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital there, the pediatric unit. Very good program. So let's move on to our... Oh, somebody had actually said stomach flu. So that is another cause for vomiting and so on. Let's do number 4. So we're on the females right now. You are a 43-year-old female with right-sided lower abdominal pain. That's all I'm giving you.
What?
That is it. Because this is the reality, right? You're sitting in your office as a physician,
uh-huh.
and the patient comes in, "Doc, my right side is hurting me." That's it. That's all you get. So as a doctor, you now have to ask a series of questions. So ask away.
I don't even know what the first question should be. But I tell you, who knows, this chap that is calling right now, they're going to investigate this matter and say good evening to the Better Health Radio Show. Hello.
Hello. Could it be a sign of appendix erupting?
Could it be?
Appendix.
Appendix.
Erupting, yes.
But what would make you say appendix? It could be so many things. So you need to ask some questions, you know.
Well, it's happened to me and... I went to my doctor, and when he examined me, my side was really hurting me, and he sent me off to the hospital, and it was my appendix.
Yes, appendix is one of the correct answers.
Okay.
So from previous experience, and this works in medicine as well, your ability to diagnose sometimes is based on what you have learned previously, experiences that you as a physician...
Thank you, caller.
Yeah.
Though, sorry,
right,
that... you have gone through before, which is one of the reasons why in your clinical years, you're encouraged to spend time on the wards, because that's how you pick up different things.
So your number one answer was the appendix?
No, it wasn't necessarily number one. All right. That's one of the possibilities.
I'll tell you what was going through my head when you asked the question. I was saying something is wrong with one of the organs inside. I had not come to a conclusion which organ it was.
Well, there you go. You know, broad spectrum. Yes, there's something wrong on the inside. Wow.
I said to myself, it has been an organ in there somewhere. I just didn't identify which one.
Okay, so we have another answer here on... I nearly said YouTube because I saw tube here, right, on WhatsApp. This person said pregnancy in the tube, and that's also correct. It's called an ectopic pregnancy. Ectopic means located in a place other than where it should be. So ectopic pregnancy is another cause for pain, and it can be right side or left side. Mm-hmm. But we just said for this one, right-sided pain. So that's another possibility, yes. You have another caller?
We have several callers, but after the lady gave the first answer and you accepted it, they hung up.
Oh, there are many more diagnoses that we can think of. Many more.
Right
many
side?
More. Right side.
Which side is the kidney on? Oh, no, there are two kidneys. in that case, then one definitely has to be on the right side.
So what else could it be then? We have another answer here. This is from our friend over in Brooklyn again, mm-hmm. Ovarian cyst.
On the right side?
You have two ovaries too, Greg.
All right, there you go. Okay. So then it has to be on the right side, so I can't be wrong.
Oh my goodness me. Oh, the tears are falling from my eyes.
You are a happy camper today, aren't you?
Oh, somebody said...
We got a caller if you want to engage that one.
Okay, so somebody said liver problems. Yes, depending on how much the liver has enlarged, you can get right-sided abdominal pain. I was thinking lower abdomen. The liver tends to be a little higher, but if it's very enlarged, you can get lower abdominal pain from an enlarged liver. So let's take this call. Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening.
Good evening.
How are you?
I am... doing well. I'm a little hungry now. I mean, I had a fairly good lunch today, but all of a sudden I'm feeling hungry.
Okay, tell sure the truth, though. I'm buy you something.
She had a lot of largesse today already. Somebody made sure that she didn't have to go in the kitchen today. That's all they will say about her business.
She's all okay. Right. Yes, you want to take a chance at one of the diagnoses?
Can it be kidney stones?
It can be. It can be kidney stones, yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So far we're doing well.
We are.
All right.
I nobody has been wrong as yet.
All right. That's wonderful.
So let's see, what have we had so far? We had appendicitis. We had problems with the ovary. Somebody else is saying cancer. So cancer, yes, of any of the organs in the bowel, especially mm-hmm. those on the right side. So colon on the right side, ovarian cancer. Because remember I said right side?
Yes, you did.
Right.
And there's a call on the line if you choose to engage.
Okay, we'll take that call. Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening. Could it be a bladder infection?
It can be a bladder infection. I was listening for that one earlier. Even although the bladder tends to be central, not tends to be, it is central, you can have the pain on the right side. And caller, I'm not going to let you get away. Please tell me some of the symptoms associated with a bladder infection. Hello?
Pain in the lower abdomen.
Pain in the lower abdomen. Very good. Mm-hmm. You want to try one more?
Not at the moment.
Okay, no problem. Let's see if any other callers after you can give us some more symptoms.
A symptom of a bladder infection?
Bladder infection, yes.
No, this is out there. Burning when you urinate?
Yes. Somebody said passing water quickly.
So I was right?
Yes.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
He just literally...
pat himself on the back there. We got another caller, Doc?
Yes, let's take that call. Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening. How are you all?
Oh, we're doing well, thank you. How are you?
Good evening, sir.
Always enjoy the show on Sundays.
Thank you very much.
Answer to your last question is regular urination.
Yes. So we have that same answer here on WhatsApp. Passing water frequently. So that's correct.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
So we have another... I have here two, three, possible four... Four more. I think we can try.
Four more?
Yes, I think we can try at least two more causes of abdominal pain. There's so many. We can try for two more.
Two more causes.
Oh, yeah. Somebody else said for the urinary tract infection, discolored urine. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that you can get sometimes is that the urine has a very strong, strong scent.
Pungent odor.
Yes. And not necessarily all bladder infections do not necessarily require antibiotics. And this is a plug for the ladies. Remember, when you're wiping, you wipe from front to back so that you don't introduce bacteria into the urethra. And the other thing is, you need to go to the bathroom. Do not go the whole day. Nurses, teachers, doctors, social workers who sit down or work for the whole day without drinking water and going to the bathroom. It's a good thing that there's no electricity so that I would get struck. But yes, you need to go to the bathroom and drink water frequently. Yes, let's take this call. Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening.
Yes, good evening. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Great. The pain on the right side, could it be a blockage on the small intestines or a twisting? I can't remember what you call it again.
Right. So you can have things like adhesions, which cause the bowel to stick down and it can twist on its own, which is what we call a sigmoid volvulus. A volvulus is twisting on itself. Mm-hmm. You can have a blockage as well that can cause pain. Mm-hmm. So you are correct.
Okay. Thank you. Have a good evening.
Thank you, caller. Let's try to engage this next one here before the doc changes her mind.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Yeah, good evening again. Sorry for calling back again.
That's quite okay.
But other part of what I said just now is could be instead of urine, the bread yellow, a little more like mongrel rum, like more brownish like.
Yes, because sometimes you can get blood in the urine. If you do have a bladder infection, a cystitis, yes, you can.
Right. Antibiotics cure that, though?
You can, depending on what your doctor has found, he or she will decide whether or not you need antibiotics.
Because I once had a bladder infection, and I never really get no problems from it after using antibiotics.
Right. So sometimes you do need antibiotics. Some people, if you have a mild infection, you can drink water and make sure your hygiene is good, and sometimes it goes away, other times it doesn't, and you need antibiotics.
But the only thing sometimes is still getting lower back pain.
From a bladder infection?
Yeah. I'm asking if that could be part of that too.
Mm.
Or that's more concerned with the prostate.
Well, if you have prostate issues or kidney stones, those would more so involve the back, because I don't know. I'm not saying it can't happen.
Okay.
But usually persons with bladder infections don't complain of back pain, per se.
Okay, thanks.
All right, no problem.
All right, Mr. Monkey, you have a wonderful evening. I like that.
So we're going to press on. I think we've gotten pretty much some very good answers. So we'll just go over them. Somebody said ovarian cyst or tumor. We said ectopic pregnancy, which is a pregnancy located outside of the uterus, commonly located in the fallopian tubes. Oh, I had pelvic inflammatory disease, which is an infection of the pelvic organs, so the fallopian tubes, the ovaries, the cervix. You can have a bladder infection. You can have problems with the colon. You can have a hernia that's trapped. So you can have a hernia it can be on either side, but remember I said right side. Mm-hmm. So you can have either a femoral or inguinal hernia. It could be a miscarriage causing that pain. And we said appendicitis. So we are going to move on to question 5. I think this
one... I beg to interrupt you because we have another caller.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening to you, Doc, and...
The other chap. That's quite fine, sir. Go ahead.
could the person could also be constipated?
You can also have constipation, yes, especially in those persons who are well backed up. That can cause some abdominal pain as well.
Yes, I figured that.
And another one that I have here, I didn't mention, it wouldn't apply to you, sir, but to women who are still within their childbearing years, when they're ovulating, they can also get some pain, either on the right side or left side. Mm. So that's another cause for pain in your lower abdomen.
All right, I do like to hear you laughing.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Continue to listen.
Yes, I will.
Thank you, sir. Have a good evening.
So we're going to move on to question number 5. And I think this one is pretty easy. Your niece is 7 years old. In your opinion, she is not reading as she should, and you are forever telling her not to sit so close to the television. What do you think is wrong with her? Not you, Greg.
Okay. I think I got this one. I think I have this one as well. Mm-hmm. But we're going to wait for someone to call. Elijah's not going as yet. While you're waiting on the call...
Maybe calls, you should write it down so I can't accuse you of...
But I've proven myself already. I don't have to do that, no.
Okay, fine.
But I want to tell the listeners, we got to thank the good doctor. This evening she came in early, and she's on top of the world because her dream was always to, as she told me several occasions prior... to read the news. Well, this evening, we gave her that opportunity, and she was a standout. And she was on top of it. If you could see her beaming afterwards, you couldn't believe it. So I say to you, good doctor, congratulations. You're even a bigger radio star than before.
Thank you.
So report here next week, Sunday at 5 o'clock, please. We got something else for you to do.
I hear you. But honestly, I've always wanted to do it. It's one of my dreams that has... You know, people got bucket lists?
Mm-hmm.
If I had one, that would be on it.
All right. Well, though, you're going to have to cross that one off before we put it on because we've done it.
Yes. So let's see.
We've got a caller on the line. We've got 2 callers on the line, by the way, before you... go ahead. In fact, I might be answering the question you asked, so let's find out, huh?
Let me just repeat the question. Your niece is 7 years old. She's not reading as she should, in your opinion, and you're forever telling her not to sit so close to the television. What do you think is wrong with her? Oh, sorry. Good evening.
Good evening, both of you.
Good evening.
Yes, hello. Go ahead, please.
She's having a problem. Her eyesight is not good. You need to have her eyes checked out.
Yes, you are on the right track.
Thought it was easy.
Yeah, it was an easy question.
Yes.
So what I want the next... Thank you for calling.
Yes.
So what I want the next caller to do is to give me the medical diagnosis, please.
And we have a caller on the line.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Yeah, good afternoon. That young lady would be nearsighted.
She is. She is nearsighted. And can you give me the medical term for being nearsighted?
When you can't, I don't have a medical term, I think it is when you can't read things from afar. And you could only read them from closer.
Yes, that is correct. Let's see if we can find somebody. Thank you very much for your contribution. You are correct, sir.
You're spot on, sir. You're doing very well. Let's try this other caller.
Good evening again.
Good evening.
I think the term would be conjunctivitis.
No, conjunctivitis is actually... inflammation of the conjunctiva.
Would that be red eyes? Or
yes, that's one type. Listen, one cause.
We learning well from you, doc. We on the ball tonight. You
report for duty at the Winston Scott Polyclinic.
Whereas you can come and do this easily.
Correct.
I may get charged doing that. I'll be against the law. So, anyhow, go ahead.
So conjunctivitis isn't the answer that we're looking for.
Okay, thank you very much.
No problem, sir.
All right, we got another call on doc.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening.
Good evening. The question is, what is the medical diagnosis for our question? Persons have said that she's nearsighted, and that is correct.
Is it astigmatitis?
No. What you mean is astigmatism, and that has something to do with the shape of the eye. So that's not what we're looking for either. That's a different diagnosis. And actually, coming up in a few weeks, we have another ophthalmologist who will be coming in, and we'll be discussing some eye problems, especially in children.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for calling.
All right, doc. Don't go. We've got another one for you. Well, that one is gone. Let's try this one now then.
Good evening.
Hello, good evening. Is it myopia?
That is correct. Myopia is the medical term for being nearsighted.
Ma'am.
Yes, please.
You didn't Google this, did you?
No, I didn't, because I have it. So.
That was going to be my question.
Very well done, my dear.
Okay.
Thank you.
So in our show coming up, we're going to learn all about how the eye works.
We've got another caller, doc. I don't know if they want to ask a question or answer the question.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm calling about eyes or constipation.
Ask a question. We've got the expert right here.
Okay, sir. I don't care what we do with it's going to be there. Is it hereditary?
He's asking if constipation is hereditary.
Some causes for constipation in children would have been hereditary, but by the time you're a little older, it's not so much so hereditary. Have you been investigated? Did they do a scan of the bowel to try to figure out why you're constipated? Have you checked your diet, for example? Are you getting enough water? Are you getting enough fiber? One of the things that I can think of, and remember, we can't make diagnoses over the radio.
Fair enough.
Right? But one of the things that some people have is what we call a redundant colon. Like, for example, we're here at Starcom, and if I wanted to get to the Winston Scott Polyclinic, the route I should take would be to continue on River Road and turn left at the roundabout onto, what's that road?
In front of QEH.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and then onto, right, and then onto, okay, so I'm River Road, roundabout, and then turn right, and then I'd be right there by the Winston Scott, turning left onto Gemmett's Lane.
Gemmett's Lane.
Right. Right onto Gemmett's Lane and left onto Lady Mead Gardens, and I'm there. However, in redundant colon, if I wanted to get to the Winston Scott Polyclinic, I would turn left at Starcom, go to Fairchild Street, go through Marhill Street, go around and go on Robert Street.
A long-winded way of getting.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So instead of having one short route, there's a lot of colon. So there are many loops and the stool takes a bit of time to get out, and that leads to constipation. So that's one of the causes.
And it's called what? Loop?
It's called redundant colon.
Can you get cancer from that?
One of the things that needs to be ruled out in constipation, especially in older persons, is a tumor or some form of cancer of the colon. If you're a certain age, I think it's over 40, you should be screened ideally by having a colonoscopy. And no, 50. 50 is the age. If you have risk factors, your screening starts years before, I think about 10 years, so at 40. I might be wrong on that one, but you need to be screened.
All right. In any event, what are the...
Before we start with that.
Sure.
Go ahead, caller.
I know families that might have that are constipated. So I thought we have to be hereditary.
Okay. Well, you have to figure out if there is something that the persons in your family might have. Again, there are many questions that the doctor will ask. There are different blood tests and stool tests and scans that they would do to try to figure out the cause of constipation. If you haven't seen a doctor about your constipation, you must make the effort to go. And yeah, sometimes
I have to go back in April.
And some of the other problems, too, can be maybe medications, right? Some types of medication can cause constipation or contribute to constipation. So make sure that you do find out what the answer to that problem with constipation is, okay? So we can't give diagnoses, but make sure you get it sorted out.
Well, yeah, I take medication.
Mm-hmm.
So I can move on those. So buy, I can get a review.
Yeah, definitely speak to your doctor about it.
I think we'll get those far out.
Okay, sir. Right, sir. Well, you have a wonderful evening.
I'll keep in touch with you all.
Okay, take care.
I'll text you yourself, though. I'm grateful, though.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for remembering me. Archie. He says he has to go back in April, so he says he'll ask a question then. You were alluding to some of the risk factors. I want to know, you said that with risk factors, it can be earlier than 50. What are some of those risk factors?
A first-degree relative, for example. So a brother, a sister, mother, father who has colon cancer.
Mm-hmm.
That puts you at risk. Smoking, that's another one. Those are the ones I can think about off the top of my head
right
now. So if you think that you are at risk for colon cancer, make sure that you go and see your doctor. And even if you don't think that you are at risk, it's still part of routine screening. Please, if there's anybody out there who's listening to me and you recognize that I'm incorrect, I mean my colleagues, you know, just give me a little shout out. Don't want to misinform the public. And actually what I'll do is I'll look it up before we go.
All right. There's a call on the line, please.
Hi. Good evening again. I'd just like to ask a question. I have a sister in her 40s. Every hour on the hour, she has to go to the washroom to pee. And we were wondering, no matter if she don't drink water or what, every hour she has to go to the washroom.
There's a disorder called hyperactive bladder, where the bladder just seems to always be, well, like the name suggests, hyperactive, overactive bladder. So that could be a cause. Again, you have to think about things like medication. There are so many different possibilities for causing one symptom. Diabetes, for example, can cause frequent urination. So that's another thing you have to consider.
But she don't have it. She went and checked that out. She don't have that.
Okay, so you can just look. Well, perhaps the doctor can focus then on maybe something in the bladder itself. Maybe she's on medication that contains a diuretic, which causes you to pass water frequently. That's another possibility.
Eye drops.
So you have So you have to consider all the different possibilities. So make sure, I think one of the things, if I ever only want to leave one thing with all the listeners, it is anything that is bothering you, make sure you mention it to your doctor.
Okay.
Mention it to your doctor. And if you think that you won't remember, you can write a little note to yourself, you store it in your phone, you put it in your diary or something, but make sure you bring up any concern that you have with your doctor, which means that you have to at least get a checkup once a year.
Yes. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
All right. 9 before 7 is our time.
Are you kidding me?
The doctor was saying she wouldn't have enough questions.
Yes.
And the time is almost gone. You're listening to the Bet Health Radio Show. You've got Dr. Renee Boyce. She doesn't have a guest today. I'm just filling in. I'm Greg Stensili, keeping you company on this one fantastic show, because I'm actually enjoying it. And you have another question for us, Doc?
I have 5 questions.
Questions.
Your 3-year-old.
Time flies when you're having fun.
You're telling me.
Go ahead.
Your 3-year-old grandson always has a cold. At night, he coughs a lot, sounds chesty, and you see his chest sinking in. What is your diagnosis?
Give us again. Sorry for making you repeat when
that's
I wasn't
okay.
listening to the first.
3-year-old grandson. He always has a cold. At night, he coughs a lot, he sounds chesty, and you see his chest sinking in. What do you think is the diagnosis?
I must admit, wait a minute, before I make a fool of myself, there's somebody who's going to rescue me here.
Okay.
Good evening.
Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Good evening. Is he asthmatic?
You are on the right track. And the reason why I said on the right track is because he's 3 years old.
Yeah.
So he has symptoms of what looks like asthma, but the official diagnosis of asthma is not made until about age 5 or so.
Okay.
So, but you are correct. You are correct.
Though, yeah, thank you.
You are welcome.
Okay.
So you tend to say in the smaller children, they might have things like bronchiolitis or reactive airway disease. If the child has frequent episodes of wheezing and so on, well, more than likely the child is asthmatic. But the experts say, from my research, about at age 5 is when you make the diagnosis of asthma. One of the things that I want to mention here is about nebulizers at home. The treatment for asthma is a lung problem, and we do have a show on asthma coming up, so I don't want to take away too much from that. But one of the things that I want to mention is that the inhalers, they are the medication, it's put into these little particles that get into the lungs quite easily. So if your child is having an asthma attack, instead of running to go and get the nebulizer, then you have to make sure you would have washed the mask before. Then you have to hook it up, plug it in, put in the medication, and then put on the mask. The quicker thing to do would be to make sure that you at least get 1 or 2 puffs into that child, because that medication is going straight into the lungs. Sometimes the problem with the nebulizers at home, one of the problems is that it offers a false sense of security. And by the time you stay at home and you nebulize and nebulize and nebulize, by the time the child gets to the hospital, it's like trying to pump air into a rock by trying to get air into the lungs of these children sometimes if they are very, very ill. So I'm not saying that you shouldn't have a nebulizer at home. I'm saying that if you recognize that your child is ill, pick your child up and run to the nearest emergency facility. Or it could be your doctor as well, if you know your doctor has a nebulizer there and they can monitor and refer as necessary. But don't be lulled into safety saying, oh, I got a nebulizer at home. No. Mm-hmm. All right. So, yes, that's what we wanted to talk about for the child with reactive airway disease, quote unquote, asthma. Let's do question number 7. Oh, my goodness me. You have been diagnosed
time
with...
Time is against you now, huh?
Yes. You have been diagnosed with diabetes and hypertension and are being treated. Unfortunately, your spouse is now accusing you of being unfaithful because as this 53-year-old male, you are now unable to have sex. What is the diagnosis and what are some of the causes?
This one should be interesting. Repeat the question so the audience...
Sure. You're a 53-year-old male.
Uh-huh.
You have been diagnosed with diabetes and hypertension, and you are being treated. Unfortunately, your spouse is now accusing you of being unfaithful because you are unable to have sex. What is the diagnosis, and what are some of the causes?
We're waiting with bated breath.
Well, we already have an answer here on WhatsApp. This person, 5658, is correct.
What it is. So let me see if it
says. Well, if I say it, then everybody else is going to hear the answer.
Oh, you're not ready to give the answer. Yeah. Oh, we got a caller then, so hold on. Let's try this and say good evening.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
I'm here again. Is it impotency?
Try again.
Impotent.
Impotent?
We will go with, yes, we can say impotence. I remember Dr. Jerry Emtage was making a distinction between erectile dysfunction and impotence. Mm-hmm. So I have here erectile dysfunction. So that was part A, that is correct.
All right.
Thank you very much.
So the other part of my question was, and what are some of the causes?
Well, I thought she was going to take a stab at the second question as well, but second part of the question, but she's gone.
We have a correct answer here from 5658 again. This person is just on the ball. All right, so my question is, what are some of the causes of erectile dysfunction?
We got a caller before you give the answer out. Hold on, please.
Good evening. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show.
Maybe he's been treated for his hypertension.
Mm-hmm. That is absolutely correct. So what you are saying is,
he should go back to the doctor and see if he would give him a different type of tablet or something.
My dear, go straight to the head of the class. In Jamaica, sometimes what the men say is the tablets them cut my speed. If you realize that medication that you have been given for whatever reason is causing you some side effects that you don't like,
mm-hmm.
don't take it upon yourself to just stop the medication.
Yeah.
Go back to your doctor.
Consult with him or her.
Exactly.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
All right, I think we got another caller lined up.
Yes, let's see if this person can give another cause.
Hello.
Yeah, I was referring to causes.
Sure.
Failure to have an extended erection.
That's the answer. So what are some of the causes?
What would lead to that happening?
Well, we mentioned erectile dysfunction, ED. So what I'm saying is that ED would stop you from having an erection for the duration of time that you need to have one.
So erectile dysfunction is a cause for impotence. So we're trying to figure out what can be some of the causes that can lead to you not having an erection. What are some of the causes? That's what we're trying to get at.
Well, medication is one, too.
Yes.
Medication can prevent that. What else? I think I will only go with medication.
Okay. That's correct. I gave you a very important clue.
Thank you, caller.
Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome.
I gave you a very important clue when I gave you this story.
This caller was able to tell us that.
Right. Remember to turn your radio down.
Yes.
You're turning your radio down, please?
Sorry.
That's
right. No problem.
Go ahead, please.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Alcohol?
Excess alcohol use, yes. So those persons who think that alcohol does them well, no, it doesn't. It cuts your speed.
Okay.
Thank you. We got another caller dot. Let's try to get them in very quickly.
All right. Good evening.
Good evening. I think it's a lot to do with blood flow.
Yes, it is.
Which is what I have.
If you have problems with your circulation, yes.
Correct.
But I gave you a clue. I'm looking for answer.
Oh, not that one, because I had that one.
Right. So we have here on WhatsApp psychological problems. Yes, that's a very big part of it, because mm-hmm. if you're stressed about not being able to get an erection, it's a vicious cycle. You're not able to get one. So yes,
mm-hmm.
psychological. But one thing I said, let me read the question one more time.
Caller, stay on the line. You'll get it. I'm quite sure when she repeats the question.
You have been diagnosed with diabetes and hypertension and are being treated. Unfortunately, your spouse is accusing you of being unfaithful because you're unable to have sex. What is? Give me that cause that I'm here looking for.
It's a lot to do with body function.
Low sex drive.
Lack of that.
Well, that's another possibility, yes. But I am looking for one answer. Can I just possibly just read a WhatsApp?
Yeah,
thank you, ma'am.
Got another call. Thanks, ma'am.
So this person here wrote, can an unattractive woman or a nagging woman cause erectile dysfunction? Listen,
I'll be honest with you, nagging woman came to my mind, you know, but I said, no, don't say that, but somebody said it, so there you go.
Okay, so since we are...
We've got a caller too.
Okay,
six callers.
Diabetes?
Yes, that's what I was looking for.
Yeah, because you just read it back.
But yes.
As long as you're a diabetic, it is said that you do not function as you should.
Unfortunately. So you have to make sure that your diabetes is under control.
Control, yeah.
Yes, that's what I was looking for.
Thank you, sir.
So we have another...
You're welcome.
Okay, take care. Go ahead, Doc.
Right. So what I will do, I will keep these remaining questions...
Yeah, and the phone is still going. You believe it? Anyway,
yes, because we are out of time for this show. But Doc for a Day will be back. We'll do it at another time. I want to thank all of you, the callers, those who participated, and you've done very well.
Yep,
because
you must congratulate them.
The answers were spot on. So congratulations to all of you. Oh, somebody else said here one of the causes for erectile dysfunction is infidelity. Guilt. Okay, so those are good answers as well.
Be vicious now.
Yes. So before I get myself into trouble, this is where I'm going to say thank you for tuning into the Better Health Radio Show. We're here every Sunday from 6 to 7 p.m. on VOB 92.9 FM as usual. I did make a concerted effort, Gregston, to try to remember what next week was going to be, but I don't remember. But I will try to forward the information so that you can look forward, so you can do your own research and we can have a very vibrant conversation.
Wonderful. We look forward to seeing you and hearing you at 5 o'clock next week, 5 p.m. next week.
Scandal.
Yes, it was nice having you here, Doc.
Yes, great being
earlier
here.
Earlier than the normal time, she came in, as I told you before, and she came in and actually performed well within the new segment there. We thank you kindly for being part of that.
My pleasure.
The invitation is extended again for you to come back again if you so desire and do the same thing once again. With reference to Dr. The Better Health Radio Show, you are one doctor that is always appreciated around here, and the audience seems to love you.
Thank you very much.
They are happy when you're here, and I'm happy when you're here. So we'll see you next weekend, same time, 6 o'clock, right here on the Better Health Radio Show. All right, Doc, you take care.
Okay, bye.
We will catch you next weekend.